Now, the third verse is probably one of the most difficult verses in the Bhagavad Gita. It's like in baseball, those who know the term, you know, curveball. You know, when the pitcher throws a ball that is curving, and then the batter doesn't know which way, is it going this way or this way, and it throws a strike. Or in cricket, we call it a googly. You know, the person is always throwing leg spin, and then suddenly he throws an off spin, and the batsman is expecting a leg spin, but his hand motion is the same, but the ball spins in the opposite direction, and he gets clean bowled. So same way, Bhagwan here has thrown a googly, and we probably will get clean bowled. So that's why we need a guru to protect our stumps, to protect us from strikes. So it's a very, very beautiful verse. Yanisha sarva bhutanam.
Yanisha sarva bhutanam.
Tasyam jagarti samyami.
Tasyam jagarti samyami.
Yasyam jagrati bhutani.
Yasyam jagrati bhutani.
Sa nisha pasyato munehe. So the first line is Ya Nisha means that which is night for Sarva Bhutanam, for all beings or for all humans. It is night. Tasyam, in that night, Jagarti Sayami. So here the man of wisdom is called Sayami. That means one who is self-controlled. Such a person, Sayami Jagarti. So where everybody is sleeping, he is awake. So they say, well, is he a security guard? Is he a night watchman? Night watchman? Is that what a man of wisdom is? Everybody is sleeping, he is awake? Yes. Bhagavan says, yes. That's too difficult. Can you make it a little easier? Can you please explain who this man of wisdom is? You're saying when everybody is sleeping, he's awake. He said, okay, I'll explain. Yasyam jagrati bhutani. Yasyam means where, jagrati, where awake all beings. Sa nisha pasyato munehe. So this muni, this wise person, sa nisha pasyato, he sees night. So you didn't make it any better, you made it worse. He said, where everybody is asleep, he is awake. And where everybody is awake, he is asleep. Again, you are saying he's a security guard, he's a watchman. So can you please explain this? So this is a very interesting incident. One person came to Gurudev. He says, Gurudev, do you have any translation of Bhagavad Gita? Swami Chinmayananda says, yeah, we have commentaries, lot of commentaries, go to the office. No, I don't want commentary. Commentary is somebody's opinion, right? He says, yeah, I don't want somebody, I want to understand Gita myself. Just give me word by word translation and I will understand Gita. So now this kind of verse, what is he going to understand? He'll say, this is useless. You know, it doesn't make any sense. Everybody's sleeping, he's awake. And everybody's awake, he's sleeping. I don't want my children to be exposed. So that's why we need an acharya or a teacher to understand that. So when he says that it is darkness for everybody, such a person is awake. What is darkness? Darkness is ignorance in the fourth line. And in darkness, all wrong things happen. If you think about it, everything that is deceitful happens in the dark. Right? In the night, they will, you know, rob the bank. In the night, they will steal. In the night, they will do all the bad things. Gambling, drinking, everything happens at night in the darkness. So for a person who is in darkness of ignorance. And what does they mean? That they are doing only involved in doing worldly things. And for him, there is no knowledge of God, of self. So for the wise person who, the world is in ignorance, the world is in darkness, he is awake. He is awake to the Lord's presence within Om, the Self, the Consciousness. He is constantly awake to the divinity within, which to the people they are asleep means they are in the ignorance. So that is one. The example Gurudev gives in his commentary, like an engineer and the villager, you know, they both walk into a city and the lights are on at night. The engineer knows that there is a power source somewhere from where the power is coming, and it is 110 volts or 220 volts, and that's why that. But for the villager, you know, he just sees lights. He doesn't know where they came from. That reminds me of a little story. I think some of you may have heard. It's an old one where this villager and his son, who is about 25, 30, first time come to the city, and they have never been in a city before, and they have a lot of money, so they are staying in a nice hotel. And so after checking in, they don't know where to go, and so they see this elevator. And the father doesn't know, and the son doesn't know. So suddenly this old lady comes, she enters the elevator, it goes up, and after some time the elevator comes down, and a beautiful girl emerges from it. So he says, "Son, let's go home and bring your mother." Put her in this elevator. So that is the difference between an engineer and a villager, because the villager does not know, while the engineer knows from where this power is coming. And why is we are in darkness? Because we look at life through this ego slit. Like if I have a window is covered and there is a small slit of the curtain, when I look out, all I see is a very small part of the universe, right, of the outside. As I open the curtain wider, I can see more. I can see the whole street. I can see everything. Now, how supposing if I, there's no walls of the house, even the walls are gone, then what? I go out, I can see the stars, I can see the sky, I can see everything. So as we widen our perspective, the world becomes more clearer. So that's the difference between us. We look through life from a little ego slit, while the wise person has no walls, sees the oneness in the universe. So that is the difference between us and this wise person. And why do we have this problem? Buddha calls it tanha. Tanha is a very beautiful word that is used in Buddhist literature, means tremendous selfish desire. That is called tanha, and that's what we have. And that's why he gave us the Eightfold Path of Wisdom, you know, in Dhammapada of Buddhism. So that's the difference, that we see plurality and he sees the Lord. He sees oneness in all. Another example, which is always given, without which no Vedanta lecture can be complete, is the rope and the snake. Of course, most of you know it, but just to summarize very briefly, see, I'm walking in the forest and it's semi-dark and I see a rope lying on the ground, but I think it is a snake because it is dark. It's not completely dark and it's not completely bright. It is the twilight, evening time. So not seeing the rope as the rope, I project a snake on it, and then I get scared the snake will bite me. Or if my foot touches the rope, I think I am bitten by the snake, I start crying, I start sweating. So similarly, this world is nothing but the Lord, the consciousness. Not seeing God in everybody, we project the snake upon it. Not seeing the rope, we project the snake. The God is in him, her, it's in the chair, it's in the mic, it's everywhere, in the trees, in the plants. God is there, but we don't see God and we project all the differences. And this is my friend, this is my enemy. So a wise person sees rope everywhere, while the ignorant person, the one who is in the world of having fun, khao piyo maja karo, is seeing the snake. And he has no problem with it. He says the world is real. I have not seen God. I don't know who God is. I'm here to have fun. The problem comes for people like us. You know why? Because we see the snake, but we have been told that there is the rope. So while seeing the snake, I'm searching for the rope. You understand what I'm saying? I see the world, but I've been told this world is nothing but God. You say, yeah, but I know, but I don't see God, especially in my mother-in-law. Definitely I don't. That is a... or my neighbor, or my boss, you know. Say, I know God is everywhere, but I don't see him in, you know, in these terrorists, or I don't see him in child molesters, or I don't see him. So I know God is in everywhere, and I want to see God, but I can't. And so that is called, you have been told that this is a rope, but I see the snake. So the guru has told us that there is a rope, but I am seeing the snake out of ignorance. So while seeing the snake, I should become aware of the rope. And ultimately, you cannot have half snake and half rope. You cannot say the top half is snake and the bottom half is rope. Once you see the rope, even 1 inch of rope, you see only rope. And until you see the rope, you will see the snake. So similarly, once you have this experience of God, then God is everywhere. So that one experience is what this Gita is telling us, that once you see that, then there is not. So the wise person is awake to the rope, while you and I are seeing the snake but searching for the rope. At least that is better than a person who has no interest and says, I don't even care, this is useless knowledge, let me have a couple of drinks and let me watch TV, you know, with my foot up on there and having a few beers. At least we are trying. So it is better that I know there is a snake, but the guru has told me actually it's not snake, it's rope. So seeing the snake, I'm searching for the rope. So that is the in-between. And actually that's where the problem comes. The other guy has no problem. He says, forget about God and Gita and all. You know, have fun. You live only once. And the wise person has no problem because he sees God everywhere. It's you and I who have this problem. The third example, and then I will end, is actually there's two more examples. One is the subject and the object. So you and I see objects. Like he is an object, the chair is an object, even my body is an object, my mind is an object. My intellect is an object, my vasanas are objects, these worlds are objects. But we don't see the subject, the knower. Who is it because of which I am able to see? Because of which I am able to? So the wise person sees the subject, you and I see objects. We see everything. But that one subject is in all objects. Everything is that God. We don't see that. We see the differences. And the third and the last example is, we live in three states, waking, dream, and deep sleep. Waking, dream, and deep sleep. And our shuttle bus only has three stops. Either I'm waking, or I'm dreaming, or I'm in deep sleep. So we have no experience of the fourth state, which is called Turiya state. So because it is my body is awake or sleeping, then I'm, you know, or dreaming, my mind is dreaming, my intellect can be fast asleep or awake. But the Turiya state, the state of Om, you and I are not familiar with, but the man of wisdom always lives in that fourth state, which they call as Turiya. Even when he's awake, he's in that wisdom. Even when he's dreaming, even when he's asleep, it does not mean that he doesn't have dreams or he doesn't need to sleep. Yes, he will have waking state, dream, and deep sleep, just as you and me. But having established in that Turiya state, yasmin sthito na dukhena guru napi vichalyate, even the greatest sorrow cannot disturb this person from that Turiya state. And that is the difference between us and the man of wisdom. That's why we are awake to the world. For him, the world has no importance. For him, the Lord has importance. While for him, God, he's always there, and we think, where is God? And I have not seen God. When I see God, I'll decide maybe next life, maybe five lives from now. But he is experiencing it right now. And then people always come and say, this path of sadhana is very difficult. Very difficult. You have to do service. You have to get up and pray. Then you have to remember the Lord. Then you have to sit and meditate Om for half an hour. And then I have to constantly remember. So there was a Uriya Baba. He was a Baba from Orissa. And he was living in Banaras. And somebody goes to him and says, Maharaj, this path of sadhana is very difficult. He says, okay, it's very difficult. That's fine. Go ahead and enjoy. Have fun. Eat, drink. Why are you coming to my lectures? Enjoy life. So, yeah, go and do all that. So then the man waits for man. And then he says, you know what? Who will do sadhana? Let the dogs and cats and horses and cows, let them do sadhana. He says, Maharaj, how will the animals do sadhana? He says, that's exactly what I'm telling you. Sadhana is for you, is for humans. Who else will do? You think a dog will sit and meditate? No, a human being has to do it. You think a cat will be going to the temple and praying? So the point is that this spiritual path is for humans. If you and I don't do it, who will do it? You think our pet dog will do it or the rock? So that's why sadhana, even though it's difficult, it is worth doing. And that's the essence of this verse. I hope I was able to explain this darkness and night. I think it's very difficult, but I had 3-4 commentaries and all these examples I tried about the rope and the snake, and he sees the Lord everywhere. We see plurality. He sees the subject. We see objects. And we go through waking, dream and deep sleep, but he is in the fourth state called Turiya. Any questions, any comments? We have about 10 or 15 minutes.
When you pray God, you're always asking something, demanding. Give me this, give me that. It's like a bargain you're doing.
Right.
I've been doing so many years, praying and all that, Mom, you've been doing all these years till it's not finished, whatever you want or whatever. It's hard to explain the kids born and brought up here, how to convince them there is a God and... I told in the other way,
right,
to my son or something, just like you believe in Santa Claus, show me where is the Santa Claus, and then I'll tell you where the God is. I mean, I don't know. I had to sit and find literally how to explain it since the grandchildren are involved.
Right. Yeah, only thing is Santa Claus is unreal and God is real. I think that we have
to. I don't know how to.
Yeah. I think, it's difficult. It's difficult, but I think you can explain through nature. You know, how the plants growing, the flowers are blooming, all the varieties of fish, and how we are breathing and how our body is working, you know, in synchrony, and how all this is happening, how the planets are in, and then how the Halley's Comet. So through seeing the synchronicity of the whole universe, there has to be an intelligence. You don't have to necessarily, they may not want to believe in Krishna or Ram or Buddha or Shiva, but projecting it as an intelligence which is behind this whole universe, which is also making us function. So, and depending on his level, how old that child is, and when they are younger, of course, you have to use examples like Santa Claus, but as they get older, it should be a scientific explanation. And slowly, and I think that's what we are trying here in Bal Vihar. You know, from age 3 to 18, that's all we are feeding them about God and values and how to find and so on. Lives of saints, all that. Thank you.
We are so used to seeing the duality.
Yes.
We think that God is outside and I have to pray him, please him, to get what I want in my life or have my life happy. That's one way of looking at it. Other one is that God is with us. We couldn't be moving or we couldn't be talking, we couldn't be seeing if he wasn't with us. this chair wouldn't be as hard as it is if there was no that consciousness sitting in there, making it hard. Water wouldn't be flowing because that consciousness makes the water flow.
Right.
So this Advaita philosophy is more appealing than Dvaita philosophy, where you pray and all that. Praying is important to have our mind be ready to understand Advaita, because that the praying clears a lot of things from our mind and gets it more focused on one particular thing, which is the God that is everywhere. From starting with the God outside, you need to start looking at the God everywhere. And we don't see God everywhere because, okay, Harvala I like, but Harvala's characteristic I like, so Harvala is my friend, so even if she does something different than what I do, I still accept her. But if somebody comes who I don't like, my mind says I don't like that person. But you must understand that that person is coming from their colors, because I'm going from my colors. When those two colors meet, it produces distorted vision. So I have to clear, the wise person has no color. So he sees as it is, and he knows that behind that ferocious animal or lion, there is a God behind. It doesn't mean he says that you should stand in front of him. You react the way you need to react with it. But you need to understand that he's there in every thing, in every human being. So if even if the human being, even children do not understand, if you keep working on this, the things, they will eventually understand. But they have to have that broad outlook, not that one outlook to pray Ram or Krishna or something like that. So Advaita philosophy goes with the younger kids much better.
Right. Thank you. Any more questions? Yeah.
Do you think Jesus and Krishna are the same person?
Yes. It is the one reality, one Om, one consciousness that is appearing at different times. Krishna says in the Gita, yada dadahi dharmasya glanir bhavati. Whenever I am required, I appear. So he came to Jerusalem as Jesus. He came in India as Krishna. He came in Nepal, northern part of India as Buddha. He came as Muhammad in Arabia. So that one power, one consciousness appears repeatedly in different times, in different parts of the world, and speaks in different languages. That's why the Bible is in a different language. The Gita is in Sanskrit. The Quran is in Arabic. So the Lord, when the Lord appears, has to speak to the people in the language they will understand. And the customs may be different. The way they practice in the Bible, how they go to church, may be different from what we do in the temple, lighting the fire and all. But the essence of all religions is the same, whether it's the Ten Commandments or whether it's the values in the Gita or whether it's Dharmapada of Buddhism or all the values in the Quran. They are all the same. They all point to the one truth, but manifestations are different. So there is one consciousness appearing repeatedly. That's what we say. So there is no difference between Jesus and Krishna, in my opinion, absolutely none. Because it is the one power that appeared again and again.
And people confuse all of that. It's all turned around with, you know, lost in translation.
Yes. Because we misinterpret the teachers' teachings, the Lord's teachings. And we put, like she said, our own color, our own interpretation of that. And we misinterpret. And that's why we say only people who go to this church will go to heaven and others will go to hell. Or in Hinduism, you know, Shaivite and the Vaishnavites used to fight. And so that is all ignorance, because there is actually only one. Whether it's Shiva, whether it's Krishna, whether it's Mother Saraswati, Jesus, everything is one. Yeah, that's Advaita, that there are no two. Yes.
I am kind of lost between the term Triya. There's liberation, moksha, or jiva mukti, all synonymous.
Yes.
Is it synonymous with deep sleep, or is deep sleep similar with Triya?
No, Triya is awakened.
Okay.
Triya, see, there is a deep sleep, then there is a dream, then there is waking. We go through three. A realized master is in that fourth state, which you can call liberation, called moksha, called self-realization. It is that fourth state of awakened. That's why somebody asked Buddha, are you a prophet? He said no. Are you a master? He said no. Are you a teacher? He said no. Then what are you? He said, I'm awake. Yes, he said, that's all I am. So he has awakened to that state of Om, the state of consciousness, which you and I are still in the dark. That's why they say when we are in the dark, he is already awakened. Because we are not awakened to that fourth state, which you can call it moksha, you can call it liberation, self-realization, God realization. They're all synonymous. So Turiya is the fourth state, which the master is always in, but you and I are still struggling to wake up. We are still asleep.
But then, maybe I'm misunderstanding. Sometimes the state of deep meditation or single-mindedness is often described as being in a deep sleep. Is that?
No, it's not deep sleep. The way it is similar to sleep, because the mind is still, but the person is fully awake, and his mind is still, but the person is fully awake, and he is in that higher state. So meditation is not sleep. Meditation, in fact, is a heightened state of awareness. The person is so aware of that higher state, then for that person, the body does not exist. He or she goes beyond the body and wakes up to that state of Om. In fact, they lose body consciousness. At that time, there is no consciousness of the world, no consciousness of themselves. That's why it is seems like sleep. Also in deep sleep, I am not aware of the body and I'm not aware of the world. But there is a great difference between deep sleep and Turiya state. In that state of meditation, in fact, they say 1 hour of meditation is equal to 3 hours of deep sleep. So people who meditate can actually get by with much less sleep, because there is a deep rest. Because even when I'm asleep, my mind is still active, right? My organs are functioning and my mind is thinking and creating dream. But in meditation, even that mind movement becomes still. That's why meditation is so much more beneficial than deep sleep. So it's a significant difference, but it appears to be the same. So that's why your question is absolutely right. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pasyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Hari Om.